Well, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for allowing me to be here and speak to you this morning. When you think of Balaam, you think of donkey, a talking donkey. There's actually two talking animals in the Bible. The first one is found in Genesis, the talking serpent, who caused all the problems. Then you skip over to the book of Numbers, Numbers chapter 22, and we have the story of Balaam, and with it, the talking donkey. When you think of donkey, you might think of the saying stubborn as a mule or stubborn as a donkey. Donkeys, whether fairly or not, have a reputation, a stereotype that they are stubborn. Now they're kind of hard-headed, difficult to get along with, maybe reminds you of some people. Now, this story is found as the Israelites are finishing their 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. If you recall, the first generation of the Hebrew people that came out of Egypt, when they, after about a year, about 2 years after they leave Egypt, they come to the borders of Canaan, but because of unbelief, they are sent back into the wilderness to wander around for 40 years until that first generation dies off, and this new generation, the second generation of Hebrews who have not known slavery in Egypt, come to the borders of Canaan. And what happens right before the story of Balaam takes place is that they have defeated a number of kings of the Amorites and have taken over some of the land. And now they are camped at the borders of Moab. Who are the Moabites? Well, they are distant cousins of the Israelites. Moab is one of the descendants of Lot. Lot, as you might recall, was a nephew of Abraham. So they are relatives, distant relatives. There's this big crowd of Israelites camped at the borders of Moab. The king of Moab, Balak, is in fear of them. This is what he says. He says to the elders of Midian. Okay, so there's another nation, another group of people that come into the story. The Midianites are also distant cousins of the Israelites. Midian is one of the later sons of Abraham after Isaac. And so Moab gets together with Midian. And the king of Moab, Balak, says to the elders of Midian, "This horde will now lick up all that is around us as the ox licks up the grass of the field." Now, they were fearful. They were afraid that the Israelites, the Hebrew people, would use up all of the resources. After all, this was not necessarily the most fertile land. It was the Arab land. The Middle East, there's quite a bit of arid land. And so with all the flocks, all of the animals, all the people, the most important commodity in such a place is what? It's water. And as you might recall in some of the Old Testament stories, Abraham had some disputes over water with the people of some of these areas. So water is very precious. And it's understandable that the people that already live there would be fearful, would not want to share the water that is around. And so Balak, what does he do? He sent messengers to Balaam, the son of Beor, at Pethor, which is near the river in the land of the people of Amal. Well, what in the world? Well, it doesn't make any sense to us, does it? It made perfect sense, I guess, to the Israelites. The river is probably the Euphrates. Pethor is somewhere in that area, which is 400 miles from Moab. So, you know, on horses or on donkeys, it's a good week's trip at least. So it's a long trip. Well, it would be 2 weeks round trip. Balak sends for Balaam. Well, why? Well, this is the message that he sends to Balaam. Behold, a people has come out of Egypt. Notice that Balak doesn't say who these people are. It just says a people. A people has come out of Egypt. Maybe Balak sent message to Balaam so far away. No, there must have been diviners and seers, which Balaam was, and closer in the area of Moab. But perhaps what Balak wanted to do was to make sure that he sent for someone who really didn't know who these Israelites were. Because after all, the rumor was that God had blessed the people of Israel. And who is going to go against the blessing of such a God? And so he sends for Balaam, who is far away. They cover the face of the earth, and they are dwelling opposite me. Come now, curse this people for me, since they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall be able to defeat them and drive them from the land. For I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed. Apparently, Balaam had a reputation that whatever he said, whatever he pronounced, came true. The Bible doesn't explain how or why. No, it's just assumed. It's just assumed. You know, back in those times, much more than today, people believed in spirits and gods, deities controlling every aspect of their lives. Each land, each tribe of people, even each family had their own gods. And by invoking these gods in the appropriate manner, they believed that they could control what happened. They could control the God's power. And so, you know, Balaam was doing just that. And so the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian departed with the fees for divination in their hand, making the 400-mile trip. And they came to Balaam and gave him Balak's message. And he said to them, Balaam said to the princes who arrived, the elders, lodge here tonight, and I will bring back word to you as the Lord speaks to me. It's interesting that although the messengers did not say who these people were that they wanted Balaam to curse, Balaam knew immediately who these people were because the word, the Lord, that's found in the Bible, is the personal name of Israel's God, Yahweh. Balaam knew who he was dealing with. So the princes of Moab stayed with Balaam, and God came to Balaam and said, who are these men with you? Now, Balaam probably had a pretty good idea that, you know, these people of Israel, descendants of Abraham, Balaam lives in the same place where Abraham originated, in the area of Mesopotamia. So again, it's kind of family. Everyone's family here in this story, in one way or another. He probably has heard the story of the Exodus, God's protection upon the Israelites during the 40 years. And so he knows that Israel's God has been with them, is protecting them. And now he is being asked to curse these people. He probably knows better than to do that already. And so, you know, God, like a parent saying to a child, who are these people? You know, who are they? God knows exactly who they are. You know, when a child does something inappropriate, parent usually knows, but the parent asks anyway, don't they? You know, just to get from the child's mouth kind of a confession. A realization that, you know, you're doing something wrong. God apparently is doing the same thing here, but Balaam ignores it or doesn't get it. And Balaam said to God, Balak, the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent to me, saying, Behold, a people has come out of Egypt, and it covers the face of the earth. Now come, curse them for me. Perhaps I shall be able to fight against them and drive them out. Well, God's response to Balaam is, You shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed. So Balaam rose in the morning and said to the princes of Balak, Go to your own land, for the Lord has refused to let me go with you. So the princes of Moab rose and went to Balak and said, Balaam refuses to come with us. Well, Balak isn't convinced. No. Well, Balaam himself did what was prudent, what was right. He said, I can't go with you. Balak isn't convinced, so he sends more in number, more princes, more elders, and more honorable than the first group. So, a couple weeks later, because, you know, it's long ways, a couple weeks later, this second set arrives at Balaam's tent and said to him, Thus says Balak the son of Zippor, Let nothing hinder you from coming to me, for I will surely do you great honor. And whatever you say to me, I will do. I mean, Balak is giving Balaam pretty much the kingdom. Anything. Balak is saying to Balaam, I will do anything for you if you will come and curse Israel. Curse this people for me. But Balaam answered and said to the servants of Balak, Though Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I could not go. And if Balaam had ended there, it would have been fine. But he, like Eve, back in the Garden of Eden, takes God's words and reinterprets and rephrases them. And he continues, I could not go beyond the command of the Lord my God to do less or more. He still wants to go. Now, after Balak is offering him everything that he could possibly want. You know, if he can go through with this job, he has his future set. Well, he's offering, it's like Bill Gates offering you his entire fortune if you would go curse Apple. I mean, you know, how could you refuse? Well, it's just words, right? And so Balaam says to the second set of princes and elders, So you too, please stay here tonight that I may know what more the Lord will say to me. Balaam, well, what did God say to Balaam first time? You can't go. No, whom I have blessed, you can't curse. But Balaam, apparently, no, which is reasonable because Balaam is, after all, not a believer in Yahweh, not a believer in the Lord. He's a pagan. He deals with many gods and no different incantations, different rituals might come with a different result. So maybe if he words his request to Yahweh, to the Lord, differently, maybe he might get a different result. So the princes stay. Balaam receives a message from God. And God came to Balaam at night and said to him, If the men have come to call you, rise, go with them, but only do what I tell you. God seems to have changed his mind. Well, the first time he said, Balaam, you can't go. Now God says, okay, you can go, but only do what I tell you. So Balaam rose in the morning and saddled his donkey and went with the princes of Moab. If we're stubborn and wanting our own way, God will sometimes allow that to happen. It may appear that God changes his mind. And, you know, in some ways, he has. Yet, what God is doing here is that, in spite of Balaam's stubbornness, God is going to get his plans accomplished, which is to bless Israel. In fact, it is through Balaam's stubbornness that Israel is going to be blessed even more. And then the story of the donkey. But God's anger was kindled because Balaam went, and the angel of the Lord took his stand in the way as his adversary. Well, that's interesting, isn't it? God told Balaam that he could go, but God's anger was kindled. Now, how do you reconcile that? Well, apparently, Balaam wasn't serious about following, you know, God's command that he only do what is he is he only say and do does what he is told. And what appears to be happening is that God is going to use the donkey, the angel and the donkey incident, to reinforce and to emphasize in Balaam's mind that God is serious about Balaam following his command. And so Balaam was riding on the donkey, and his two servants were with him. And I imagine the princes also were with him, even though it doesn't say here. And so there's this delegation going towards Moab, making the, you know, 1 week, 400-mile trip. And the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the road with a drawn sword in his hand. And the donkey turned aside out of the road and went into the field. Now, all of a sudden, so as an observer, as Balaam, well, pretend you're Balaam, you're riding along, and all of a sudden, the donkey veers off into the field. Okay, odd. Nothing to cause that from a human perspective. So Balaam beats the donkey. Donkey reluctantly turns back into the road, and the angel of the Lord stood in a narrow path further on between the vineyards with a wall on either side. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pushed against the wall and pressed Balaam's foot against the wall, so he struck her again. Well, reasonable. His donkey is not behaving properly. Well, the donkey should be going on ahead. There's nothing hindering the donkey. So why in the world does the donkey suddenly veer to one side? Balaam strikes the donkey. Donkey reluctantly goes back on the path. Then the angel of the Lord went ahead and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right or to the left. When the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she lay down under Balaam. There's nothing in the way, nothing attacking from behind. There's nothing at all that should cause the donkey, from a human perspective, to suddenly sit in the middle of the road. And I'm sure the party around Balaam and the donkey must have been wondering, what is wrong with this animal? Now, the donkeys are known for their kind of stubbornness, their strong will, but this is odd. And Balaam's anger was kindled. Interesting that God's anger was kindled against Balaam. Balaam's anger is kindled against the donkey. Balaam's anger was kindled, and he struck the donkey with his staff. And then the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey. And she said to Balaam, "What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times?" Balaam, missing a beat, said to the donkey, "Because you have made a fool of me." Imagine yourself as someone, one of the servants or one of the elders, princes, watching what is happening. "What have I done to you that you have struck me these three times?" And Balaam said to the donkey, "Because you have made a fool of me. I wish I had a sword in my hand, for then I would kill you." And the donkey said to Balaam, Am I not your donkey on which you have ridden all your life long to this day? Is it my habit to treat you this way?" And he said, "No. If your dog or cat spoke to you, wouldn't you at least be a little startled?" There's nothing in the text that indicates that Balaam was startled. I mean, he's so angry that he apparently thinks that donkey has always talked. And then the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in his way with his sword, with a drawn sword in his hand, and he bowed down and fell on his face. And the angel of the Lord said to him, "Why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out to oppose you because your way is perverse before me. The donkey saw me and turned aside before me these three times. If she had not turned aside from me, surely just now I would have killed you and let her live." Then Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, "I have sinned, for I did not know that you stood in the road against me. Now therefore, if it is evil in your sight, I will turn back." And the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, "Go with the man, but speak only the word that I tell you." So Balaam went on with the princes of Balak. God can use even stupid, evil stubbornness for his purposes, because what happens is that when Balaam finally gets to Balak, Balak takes him to these different high spots in order for Balaam to curse Israel. And Balaam tells Balak to set up 7 altars, offer 7 oxen and 7 rams, not cheap sacrifices, a lot of wealth. And then Balaam goes off to receive an oracle. First time, he blesses Israel. Balak isn't happy. "What have you done to me? I took you to curse my enemies, and behold, you have done nothing but bless them." And Balaam answered and said, "Must I not take care to speak what the Lord puts in my mouth?" So Balaam learned his lesson. Now he's only speaking now what God is telling him to say. Balak too is stubborn, because he thinks, "Well, okay, if he won't curse this portion of Israel, maybe he'll curse a different portion of Israel." Because apparently the camp of Israel was so big that they couldn't see all of them all at once. So he takes them to a different place. Again, 7 altars, 7 oxen, 7 rams. Balaam goes off, receives an oracle, comes back, blesses Israel. And Balak said to Balaam, don't curse them at all, and don't bless them at all. But Balaam answered Balak, "Did I not tell you all that the Lord says that I must do?" Balak is stubborn, 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 just like Balaam. Balak said to Balaam, "Come now, I will take you to another place, a third place. Perhaps it will please God that you may curse them for me from there." So, again, 7 altars, 7 bulls, 7 rams. But the difference now is that Balaam realized that it pleased the Lord to bless Israel. So, well, he didn't go off to receive an oracle anymore. He opened himself up to the Spirit of God, came upon him, and he blessed Israel. Now Balak was angry. Balak's anger was killed and was kindled against Balaam. And he struck his hands together, and Balak said to Balaam, "I called you to curse my enemies, and behold, you have blessed them these 3 times. Therefore now flee to your own place. I said, I will certainly honor you, but the Lord has held you back from honor." And Balaam said to Balak, "Did I not tell your messengers whom you sent to me, if Balak should give me his house full of silver and gold, I would not be able to go beyond the word of the Lord to do either good or bad of my own will? What the Lord speaks, that will I speak. And now behold, I am going to my people." And then Balaam goes on to give a 4th oracle, a final oracle, where he prophesies the future of some of the nations around Israel, including Moab. prophesies that Moab is going to be destroyed. Not at all what Balak wanted. And if the story ended there and nothing more was known, you might think that, okay, Balaam was a pretty good guy. He learned his lesson. But what was read in the scripture reading? They have followed the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved gain from wrongdoing, but was rebuked for his own transgression. Balaam loved wealth. He wanted wealth. And the rest of this story is found in Numbers chapter 31, verse 16, and Revelation 2, verse 14. Numbers 31:16 reads, "Behold, these on Balaam's advice caused the people of Israel to act treacherously against the Lord in the incident of Peor." Well, what is that incident of Peor? It's found in chapter 25 of Numbers, where the people of Moab and Midian incited the Israelites into Baal worship. They tempted the Israelites into worshiping Baal, which they did, including all of the rituals, all of the practices that accompany Baal worship, including those of very sensual nature. And because of that, God's anger was kindled against Israel, and a plague was sent. Many Israelites died. What Balaam could not accomplish through words, because he was forbidden from saying, he was able to accomplish through actions. Balaam actually did not learn from his experience with God. Even though he realized that he could please God by doing his will, his greed got the better of him. His stubbornness got the better of him. Revelation 2:14 reads, "But I have a few things against you. You have some there who hold the teaching of Balaam, who taught Balak to put a stumbling block before the sons of Israel so that they might eat food sacrificed to idols and practice sexual immorality." Balaam's God. Balaam served many gods. Balaam knew about many gods, including the God of Israel, the true God. But his primary devotion was to wealth. And I think the lesson that I want to draw out this morning from this story is that we will stubbornly pursue the object of our devotion. And so I want to ask you this morning, what is your object of devotion? Is it the God, the living God, or is it something else? Because if it's anything else other than God, we will compromise our relationship to Him in order to get what we want. If it's wealth, we'll get wealth, but at the cost of our relationship with Christ. If it's family, no, devotion to family is good, but it cannot come at the expense of our devotion to God. What is right and what is wrong is usually pretty obvious. It was obvious to Balaam, but he tried to justify his actions. He tried to get God to approve of what he wanted rather than simply doing what he knew God already wanted. And I believe it's the same with us. Most of the time, it's pretty obvious what God wants from us. Are we willing to do that? Or is our devotion stronger to something else? And so, I want to leave you with this thought. Know where your devotion lies and make sure it's with the God of heaven. Thank you.